Hello and welcome to the Bedrock Podcast, recording from the Innovation Lab on Dover Air Force Base. I'm your host, Jeremy Jacob Ellis. Here on the podcast, we talk about leadership, innovation, and important issues affecting our local community. Today, we are joined by Simon Sinek. Simon is an author, professor, and speaker who has published several books, including Start With Why, How Great Leaders Inspire Everyone to Take Action, and has hosted several TED Talks and other seminars. Thank you so much for being here today, Simon.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Today, we are talking about how to lead during a global pandemic and ongoing social unrest. To start, the COVID-19 outbreak has contributed to an increase in innovation in many organizations and businesses, including the Air Force. Many of these new practices may continue after the pandemic, thanks to their effectiveness. Here at Dover, for example, our med group has provided more care using virtual appointments, and our security forces are using new ID card scanning procedures at the gate, which are all more efficient and safer. Simon, what are some of the best practices that you have observed during this period, both in the public and private sectors, and how can organizations best continue to develop innovative practices and ideas?
One of my favorite examples is a pizzeria in Chicago called Demos Pizza. Before the pandemic, Demos made 70% of their revenues from selling slices. And of course, that dried up pretty quickly. And they weren't equipped with delivery services and to sell pies, but they looked at their resources. They said, what do we have? And they saw that they had a pizza oven. And most of the people would see a pizza oven and say, we can only make pizzas. But Demos recognized that pizza ovens burn hotter than regular ovens. And they learned that they could bend industrial grade plastics with their oven. So they started buying sheets of industrial grade plastics and bending them so they could make PPE for hospitals, which I think is absolutely fantastic.
Oh, definitely.
They took their resources and they completely reapplied them to make something completely new.
Oh, wonderful.
Nothing drives innovation like a crisis. We know that the Air Force, with its ability to go digital, to work from home, you know, was something that the Air Force has been trying to do not very successfully for years. Turns out it did it in 2 weeks.
Definitely.
When there's a will, human ingenuity really, really shows up. One of the problems with good times is there's no pressure.
Oh, of course. Definitely. And additionally, with this new teleworking reality that many people are facing, both here at Dover Air Force Base and within the private sector, what are the ways that you think are most effective for people to communicate the why of their organizations? And how can our leaders continue to effectively lead?
So that should filter in no matter what. And what I think is so interesting about the pandemic, you know, I get this question a lot, sort of how has leadership changed during these times? It hasn't changed. The tenets of good leadership are exactly the same as they always were. If anything, the pandemic and the social unrest that we have has highlighted, bolded, and italicized the good practices of good leadership. So, for example, checking in with people to seeing how they're doing. Many, many leaders, as soon as the pandemic hit, started checking in with people and saying, how are you? They picked up the phone and said, how are you doing? I'm worried about you. My question is why weren't you doing that when it wasn't a pandemic?
True.
Good leadership should be caring about our people all the time. Another part of good leadership is ensuring that people feel seen and feel heard and feel understood. Well, why did it take social unrest for a group of people to say, we don't feel seen, heard, or understood? You know, that should be happening all the time. So I think if anything, the social unrest and the pandemic have underscored the importance of good leadership, but it hasn't changed it at all.
Oh, definitely. I completely agree with you. And so you mentioned caring about our people and practicing empathy, and also that leaders need to really foster a safe, inclusive environment. How crucial do you think that is for innovation and continuing this innovative energy that we have?
It's absolutely essential because innovation requires teamwork. None of us is smart enough to figure out new ways by ourselves. None of us is good enough to implement a good idea by ourselves. You know, we're tribal animals, and it takes a team. And when you have good leadership, when you have a psychologically safe working environment, we come together, we trust each other, we care about each other, and we can disagree with each other and push each other and figure things out together, as opposed to being territorial or stubborn about our ideas. So the better the leadership, the better the teamwork, the more likely there is to be strong leadership, strong innovation. And you generally see this. The most innovative companies generally have very strong teams.
Oh, definitely. And so, Simon, you already did discuss our second major topic. As you know, and as our listeners know, leaders today are not only confronting the challenge of COVID-19, but we're confronting another major challenge as well. These are difficult times, and in addition to that COVID-19 crisis, we're also witnessing social unrest, and we're starting to better address issues of inclusion and diversity. Diversity is widely recognized in the Air Force as a force multiplier. Yet officers often look very different from those they lead. And similar to society as a whole, we continue to battle against discrimination and racism. A 2016 Department of Defense study found that African Americans and Latinos represent only 6% each of the total officer force, meaning active duty, reserve, and guard, whereas this percentage is more than doubled for each group's representation in the total enlisted force. And Simon, as military leaders with oftentimes very different backgrounds from some of our followers, how do we start to have these difficult conversations about race, diversity, and inclusion?
So one of the best ways to start them is with honesty and vulnerability. You know, that term vulnerability scares a lot of leaders because they think it means showing weakness. The irony is it doesn't. By saying, I don't know, or I'm struggling, or I need help, amazingly, it makes us look stronger. It makes us look like we need our team and rely on our team. No single person has all the answers, as I said before. So the way to start these conversations is for a leader who's struggling to start the conversation to literally go to some of the African Americans in their team and say, I know I need to address this. I don't know how to address this. I'm struggling. Can you help me? And that act of vulnerability is one of the best ways to create a bond and ask for help. And at the end of the day, it's going to take all of us. It's going to take all of us working together to figure this out. No one person and no one group has all the answers. And so to ask for help is the best way to start. The other thing we have to do is create safe spaces for people to express themselves without judgment. So for groups of people to get together and say, how are you feeling? How is this making you, how are you dealing with this? Especially if it's a diverse group sitting there together, because many of us have never actually heard the stories of racism that our friends and our colleagues, brothers and sisters have experienced. You know, when the murder of George Floyd showed up in the media for the rest of us, you know, I knew the stories of how African Americans were treated differently and how African American men almost all had some sort of story with the police. I knew the stories, but I never asked my Black friends about their experiences. You know, when we got together, we didn't have that conversation. We just hung out. And so I called them up and says, can you tell me, and asked them, can you tell me your experiences? And I wept from each one because I didn't realize some of the things that they have personally experienced, and now became personal for me because I never want my friends to go through what they went through.
Of course.
And so I think sometimes just stopping and asking our brothers and sisters in arms, you know, can you tell us what you've been through? Because I think many of us, though we know intellectually the stories, we don't relate them to the people who we love and care about.
Oh, definitely. And based on what you've just shared and also about your very moving podcast that you've hosted, it seems to me that empathy is one of the major forces in our toolkits as leaders, empathy and storytelling. And so what role do you think that plays now?
Well, again, it goes to what I was saying before, which is this time has underscored, highlighted, italics, bolded all of the tenets of good leadership. And good leadership always has empathy. You know, we don't assume that someone is the problem. We assume that they have a problem. You know, that we, when something goes wrong, when we have performance issues, we say, are you okay? What's going on? This is not like you, you know, to be curious about someone. To operate with empathy, especially in a time like this, means to want to try and understand what someone has gone through and make no assumptions and make no judgments.
Of course, definitely. And we did mention as well your podcast series, A Bit of Optimism, which you've recently started, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
And what inspired you to start this podcast and to start these difficult conversations that you've had with some of your African-American colleagues, peers, and friends?
So we were toying around with doing a podcast for months. We actually had a concept where I'd have conversations with people, but then COVID hit. And so that wouldn't work because we couldn't do it in person. So we decided, okay, we'll adjust to these, you know, conversations over over Zoom. And we got our first one out, and it was just about relationships. And then the news of George Floyd started to spread, and we realized that we had to use this platform that was now started. It came out after our first episode. It all happened after our first episode. We realized it was tone deaf to just continue down the path that we were on, but I wanted to shift and share some of the amazing conversations that I was having with my friends as I sought counsel and help. And at the end of the day, what I wanted to do was offer not only perspective, but offer some tangible steps that people could take. This was the optimism. We will get through this together. Like, the world will be a better place. The Air Force will be a better place. Our American society will be a better place because of our experience right now, because of what we're learning, because of the things, the wounds that are being brought to light. And so I wanted to give some tangible steps so that the people who knew that they had to have conversations but didn't know how, instead of shying away, would have some tools so they could actually move forwards and help advance the cause.
Oh, of course. And we're all very appreciative of that really inspiring bit of optimism that you're able to share with your listeners. And in a certain sense, it seems to me that your podcast and these discussions that you've started are really a first step of action. It's a way for you to take action during this difficult time, to take action, to begin starting to talk about diversity and inclusion. And it really reminds me of the honor code at the Air Force Academy. So I graduated from the Academy in 2017, and there cadets must follow an honor code, which is, we will not lie, steal, or cheat, nor tolerate among us anyone who does. This toleration clause, I think, is indicative of the Air Force as a whole, where leaders take decisive action to ensure that our institutional values are upheld. These leaders never turn away when these problems arise. Yet, as General Goldfein and Chief Wright recently said, systemic discrimination persists in our Air Force, despite the fact that diversity is integral to many of our core values. So, Simon, why do you think it is that the military as a whole strongly and proudly defends most of its values, but when it comes to race, diversity, and inclusion, few leaders discuss these topics frequently, let alone take meaningful action to promote them?
Well, it's a complex and multi-layered challenge, of which one of the issues is you touched upon, which is when a population is underrepresented amongst the senior ranks, then the senior ranks will be blind to the challenges that many in the organization face. We know about this. We know we all have blind spots, and we all have unconscious biases, and so the main reason for D&I, beyond the human reasons, is that we can get the perspectives of people who don't look, sound, or have upbringings like us, which is so important to create a diverse and innovative organization. So that's one layer. I think the other layer is I just lost my train of thought. The other layer is about. I completely lost it.
Oh, no problem.
It'll come back. Don't worry. These things will come back.
Oh, of course. And so you did mention this this concept of D&I. Could you explain that further?
Diversity and inclusion.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. And additionally, so with that idea of diversity and inclusion, how integral do you think it is to the values of organizations, not just in the military, but within the private sector as well? What have you noticed?
Well, I mean, the reason we're experiencing what we're experiencing is because these challenges, I think, are pervasive. Of course, there are some organizations that do better than others, but on whole, I think, as a nation, as American businesses, we have done a pretty bad job, and I think we recognize that we can do a much, much better job. There's a lot of good that will come of this, and I'm definitely optimistic. I know what I was going to say before, which is what's so important is conversations. is that there has to be listening. Like, and one of the things that we need to do a better job as we train our leaders is to teach some of those human skills. I hate the term soft skills. There's nothing soft about them. They're human skills. You know, we need to teach things like listening, active listening. We need to teach things like how to have difficult conversations. We need to teach things like how to give and receive feedback. And this is one of the things that will help solve the problem, which is we don't know how to listen. When somebody says, "Hey, sir, I have a problem," or "Hey, ma'am, I've got an issue," very often we don't know how to listen. We don't know how to get to the meaning of what someone's trying to tell us, but all we do is hear the words that they're trying to tell us. And really good listening is empathetic listening, where we're able to look past the words, because sometimes the words are unclear, but try and get to the root of what's causing this. So if someone is angry or upset, rather than reacting to the anger, we can say we want to try and find out why they're angry. And that's really, really important if we're going to solve any of these problems.
Of course. And as you said, these discussions are challenging. They're often emotional. They often bring to light a lot of underlying lingering tensions and deep-seated emotions. And so my question for you, Simon, is, are good leaders emotional leaders? Are good leaders emotionally intelligent leaders?
Good leaders have to be emotionally intelligent. Remember, leadership is a human activity. You're no longer responsible for the results. You're responsible for the people who are responsible for the results. You know, leadership isn't a technical skill. It's, you know, you can go to school and learn a technical skill and you can do it. Well, leadership you have to learn as well, but it's a human skill. It's like parenting, it's an ongoing process. And that's one of the other things I think we have to recognize in all of this, which is there's no magic wand that will solve the problem. It's like having tension in a marriage or in a friendship, which is you can have a difficult conversation, but that doesn't mean that the problem will stay away forever. You know, relationships have to be nursed forever and ever and ever. This is why marriage and friendship and all of these things are difficult, because it's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week job. You have to do it all the time.
Of course.
And even if you alleviate a tension and address a problem, you still have to hold yourself to a high standard of behavior and respect every single day of your life. And of course we slip. It's an ongoing process, but I think we have to be very aware that simply changing a policy or changing a guidance won't solve this problem. That each of us has to show up completely differently and be self-aware as best we can and ask for help as often as possible every single day.
Definitely. And you've brought up so many good points as well within our recent conversation. And I was also reminded of a very profound comment that you often make about leaders, and that leaders are not in charge of people, but they take care of the people in their charge. Is that correct?
That's right. Leadership is not about being in charge. Leadership is about taking care of those in your charge. I mean, that is the definition of leadership. Leadership is, you know, a position of leadership affords you authority, but being a leader means you take responsibility for the health and well-being and psychological safety of those around you.
Of course, definitely. And as well, in talking about how leaders need to be vulnerable, they have to be willing to admit when they have gaps of knowledge, when they have unconscious biases. This has become an increasingly important term, this notion of unconscious biases. And unconscious biases, as we've discussed, are always present, not only when leaders are leading diverse teams, but whenever they're interpreting information and making decisions. And I always think that leaders need to be aware of these biases, as I'm sure you do as well, and that leaders need to first collect the dots of information, those data points, before connecting them and making decisions. So in a wider perspective, what do you think about that? How do you think leaders, military leaders, civilian leaders, can address and mitigate their own unconscious biases when making decisions and leading teams?
Well, this is why we have teams, so we can take counsel. You know, good leaders will take counsel from those around them so that they can hear the perspectives of others. If you put a group of people together, we see way much more than we can see by ourselves. You know, it's like looking out at the horizon. What do you see? But if you put five people looking out at the horizon, you'll see completely different things. And it's the exact same thing. The more diversity we have on a team, the more that our unconscious biases can be checked.
Of course. Definitely. And in your experience as well, both with the Department of Defense and the private sector, what types of teams are most effective in terms of diverse groups, in terms of varying backgrounds of team members? Can you cite any examples for us?
Well, trusting teams, teams that trust each other. They share values. One of my favorite definitions of a strong culture was given to me by Lieutenant General George Flynn from the Marine Corps. And he said, culture equals values plus behavior. So if you hold values dear, then you have to behave in a way that is consistent with those values, and you will have a strong culture. If you don't have values, or if you let your behavior slip, then your culture dilutes, your culture weakens. And so the best organizations are, the best teams are trusting teams. I'll give you an example. I tell this story a lot because I love it. I went on a business trip to Las Vegas, and they put me up at the Four Seasons out there, and it's a beautiful hotel for sure. And one of the reasons it's a great hotel is not because of the fancy beds. Any hotel can buy a fancy bed. It's because the people who work there, that when you walk the halls and somebody says hello, you get the feeling that they wanted to say hello, not that they were told to say hello. You know, we're highly attuned social animals. We can tell the difference. And they happen to have a coffee bar in the middle of the lobby there. And one afternoon I went and bought myself a cup of coffee. And the barista working that day was a kid named Noah. Noah was funny and engaging. And I stood there for far too long buying a cup of coffee because I just so enjoyed talking to Noah. And so as is my nature, I asked Noah, you know, do you like your job? And without skipping a beat, Noah said, I love my job. Now in my line of work, that's really significant because like is rational. I like the people I work with. I like the challenge. I like my job. Love is emotional. You have an emotional connection to whatever it is you're doing. That's like asking someone, do you love your wife? And they say, I like her a lot. You know, it's a different answer. Noah said, I love my job. So immediately my ears perked up. This kid has an emotional connection to his job. So I said, tell me specifically what the Four Seasons is doing that you would say to me, you love your job. And without skipping a beat, Noah said that throughout the day, his managers, his leaders, will check in on him and see what he's doing. If there's anything they say, is there anything I can do to help you? If there's anything you need? Not just my manager, he said, any manager. In other words, he feels that someone's looking out for him. He feels that someone cares about him, cares what he feels, cares what he thinks, cares what he needs. And it's those kinds of environments that are the most innovative because, remember, innovation requires risk. It requires taking risks, and sometimes it requires stumbling and falling over because things don't always work out. It's inherent in the definition of innovation, which is experimentation. And experimentation requires failure. That's why we call it experimentation. But if we feel like we can't make mistakes, if we feel like we can't stumble, if we feel that if we do stumble, our team won't be there to pick us up, then guess what? We're not going to try anything difficult or new. And that's an innovation killer. And so psychological safety and the feeling that someone's got my back is the thing that drives innovation.
Of course, definitely. And I completely agree with you, Simon. And I think, at least from my perspective, one of the ways that we can help begin to build and foster that organizational trust is by establishing a strong unifying identity as an organization, as a unit. That's often very prevalent here in the Air Force and in the military as a whole. But especially now, as we're beginning to talk about diversity, about inclusion, how can we continue to forge and promote these unifying identities of our organizations while also celebrating the diverse backgrounds of our team members?
They're not incompatible. Remember, what produces the cohesion is a shared set of values, not anything superficial. It's who we are and why we show up and what we believe in, and the culture of the Air Force is different than the culture of the other uniformed forces. You know, there are people who are struggling in the Army who might make fantastic airmen. There are people who are struggling in the Air Force who might make fantastic sailors because it's all about fitting in the culture. And within that broad culture, there are subcultures. You know, the culture of a missileer is really different than the culture of a maintainer, for example. And even the different groups of maintainers. And so it's good and fine to have the different subcultures, but to recognize why you're there and know that common set of values that you all share.
Definitely. And additionally, you did bring up the importance, again, of innovation and the fact that this idea of trust is really crucial to innovation. And during
essential,
this,
yeah.
Of course, definitely. And during this time period, I wanted just to talk to you as well about the importance of mindset, and that you talk about this difference between the finite and the infinite mindset in your most recent book. And can you apply that to the current situation that we have and how best we as leaders can adapt to these scenarios?
Absolutely. So let's first consider the definition of what the two games, what finite and infinite mean. So In the mid-1980s, a philosopher by the name of James Carse, Dr. James Carse, articulated these two kinds of games, finite games and infinite games. A finite game is defined as known players, fixed rules, and an agreed-upon objective, football, baseball. There's always a beginning, middle, and an end, and if there's a winner, there has to be a loser. Then you have infinite games. Infinite games are defined as known and unknown players, which means new players can join at any time. The rules are changeable, which means you can play however you want. And the objective is to perpetuate the game, to stay in the game as long as possible. We are players in infinite games every day of our lives. There's no such thing as being number one in your marriage, for example. You can be number two, but you can't be number one. There's no such thing as winning careers. There's no such thing as being the winner of business. No one's ever declared the winner of business. There's no such thing as winning global politics, any of these things. But if you listen to the language of so many leaders, they talk about being number one, being the best, and beating their competition. Based on what? Based upon what agreed upon objectives, what agreed upon metrics, and what agreed upon timeframes. So the problem is when we play with a finite mindset in an infinite game, when we play to win in a game that has no finish line, there's a few very predictable and consistent outcomes, including the decline of trust, the decline of cooperation, and the decline of innovation. And so we have to pay attention to the game that we're in. When we go into a battle, there is a winner and a loser. It's a finite game, and so we can apply all the rules of the finite game. There's a beginning, middle, and end. There's going to be a winner and a loser at the end, and then we'll go on to fight another game. It's like when the Yankees and the Red Sox play, you know, there's a winner and a loser. The game ends, the battle ends, but the players live on to play another day. In the infinite game, it's the opposite, which is in business, for example. If a company goes bankrupt, if it falls out of the game, the game continues with them or without them. And the same is true for our nation. Our nation will continue in good times or bad times. And though we may win our battles and win our wars, the game is infinite. We're never going to be declared the winner of the world because that doesn't exist. And so the question is how do we maintain in the game? How do we stay in the game? And that the only true competitor in the infinite game is ourselves. It's a game of constant improvement. And it's I think we use the wrong analogies very often in leadership positions. We use sports analogies and war analogies to make leadership metaphors, but the reality is it's a completely different game. We need to change the analogies to things like lifestyle. So what does it take to be healthy, right? We all know what it takes to be healthy. You have to eat right, you have to exercise, you have to get sleep, you have to nurse your personal relationships, and there's probably a list of 30 or 40 other things. And it's hard to do all of those things consistently all the time, but we try hard and we strive. And it's totally fine to have finite goals within the infinite game. The infinite game is not the absence of the finite, it's the context within which the finite exists. So for example, you may say, I want to lose X amount of weight by X date. No problem, it's exciting, it's fun. Human beings, we love a metric, we love to count things. That way we can count our progress. You can't run a marathon, for example, without mile markers, because otherwise you don't know how far and how fast you're going. It's actually unnerving. Metrics help us understand speed and distance. Really, really important. So you measure yourself every morning. It's super motivating. And you track your progress towards your goal. And if you hit your goal, you get all excited. But the bad news is you have to keep exercising for the rest of your life. It's not over. So just winning a battle or just having success on an issue doesn't mean it's over. It means you have to keep going and going and going and going. Like I talked about before, in a marriage or any kind of relationship, leadership requires constant, constant attention, even if you have a string of victories, even if you overcome a challenge. You have to keep going. Now let's go back to our analogy. Let's say you have that weight goal. And what happens if you miss your goal? What happens if you don't lose the amount of weight you wanted to lose by a certain date? Do you know what happens? Nothing. Nothing happens, right? Because it was an arbitrary goal on an arbitrary date. And if you're probably way healthier now than you were before. And if you just keep at it, you will absolutely hit your goal, you know, a month or two later. And that's the point of the infinite game. It's understanding that it's more of a journey, that it's more of a lifestyle than it is an event. And I think if you look at racism in America, it's not an event, it's a journey.
Oh, definitely. It's been a journey.
Have we missed some of our goals? You're damn right we've missed some of our goals. But are we better now than we were 50 or 60 years ago? Of course we've made progress. And there's much more progress to be made. And just like a lifestyle, just like exercise, we have to keep working at it constantly. And yes, we have to announce our goals. We have to strive to hit those goals. And once those goals are hit, whether we hit them on time or a little late or a little early, we have to keep working and keep working and keep working. It is a game of constant, constant, constant improvement. And that's why leadership is so difficult. It's like being a parent, which is you don't get a day off. You are responsible for the life of a human being. It's not an event. There's no beginning, middle, and end. And rather, you have to ensure that you leave this organization in better shape than you found it.
That's so interesting. And I think you're so right in the fact that especially now with these discussions about COVID-19, about diversity and inclusion, these are ongoing discussions. They will continue. They have continued. They have historical precedents. And on that note as well, it was interesting to me in some of your YouTube videos and talks that you want to emphasize that our current situation and our current times are not unprecedented. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I get a kick out of this. You know, when COVID struck, you know, people kept saying, during these uncertain times, hello, all times are uncertain. There's never been a time in history that was certain. Every single day is uncertain. All that happened is that when something that we didn't expect happened, it reminded us that time is uncertain. These are not uncertain times. All times are uncertain. So I think that's sort of funny. It's kind of like insurance, which mm-hmm. is you don't buy the insurance with the expectation that your house is going to burn down. And you certainly don't buy insurance after the house burns down. You buy it because it's uncertain. That's what we're planning for. We're planning for uncertainty, even though most people's houses will never burn down.
And
it's the same thing. And so when I talk about these are not unprecedented times, I was talking about it in a business context, which is, you know, everybody was freaking out, like, because, you know, businesses had to reinvent themselves. Well, that's happened many, many, many times before in business. You know, hello, the internet. It put entire industries out of business. There's no such thing as a video rental store anymore. They don't exist because a new technology rendered it completely useless, completely pointless. And businesses for millennia have been forced to adapt based on changing politics, culture, or technology. Now, granted, COVID was way more sudden and way more shocking and affected everybody uniformly at the same time. That was definitely a new thing for all of us. But the fact that we have to change our businesses because the world around us has changed, not a new experience. And you look at the internet, the number of companies that were slow to adapt that are now playing defense versus the companies that embrace the new technology. You know, why is it that Netflix invented itself? Why not the television and movie industry? Why is it that Apple invented iTunes? Why not the music industry? How come Amazon invented itself and the e-reader? Amazon invented the Kindle, the e-reader, not the publishing industry. That's because they were all so slow to adapt to the changing environment around them, to the internet, that it took an entirely new company with entirely new perspective to grasp the advantages of this new environment. The most innovative organizations right now during these always uncertain times are not trying to double down on their old business models. They're pretending that they were starting their companies today. And they're asking themselves, how would we start our company today if we had all the resources, all the ambition, the same vision, what would we do today? And they're pivoting. That's what we did. We made most of our income from live events. Well, that's not happening anymore. And we didn't just try and do keynotes, but online, because there's not much demand for that. So we pivoted. We know that people want what we have. We know that we have a lot of really smart, talented people. And so we said, what if we taught live classes? And it was really important for us to make them live because I believe in human interaction. I want that human connection. And so people can now go to our website and do a Jumpstart Your Why and find their why in a couple of hours, which makes me really proud. We never had that product before.
Oh, wow.
We were forced to adapt. And we asked ourselves, what would we do if we were starting our business today? In other words, we were just, you know, we treated it like any other thing that happens in the world. It was just more sudden and we had to adapt more quickly.
Oh, definitely.
That was the only difference.
Oh, and that's so interesting, Simon. Thank you. And today on the podcast, we talked about leadership and innovation in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic and the ongoing discussion about diversity and inclusion. Thank you so much, Simon, for this great discussion. And thank you to our listeners for joining us today.
I'm Simon Sinek, and this has been the Bedrock Podcast.